You can take your copy of God's Word, start in Proverbs. We're going to look at a variety of Proverbs, and it's going to be good. Not because I'm talking, but because the wisdom is good. Proverbs was written and or edited and or collected by whom, for whom, for what? Who wrote it? Who did they write it to? What did they want to be accomplished through the writing? Of course, Solomon, King Solomon, Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Proverbs are written by Solomon. Solomon collected them for his sons, so that he could teach his sons to know wisdom and instruction. That's right there in the prologue at the beginning of Proverbs. Solomon, a father, collecting wisdom for his sons that they would know wisdom and instruction. The Lord, of course, blessed Solomon with wisdom on earth. The Lord did not just bless Solomon for some esoteric existence. Solomon wasn't living with his wisdom in the clouds. It was not some platonic category of wisdom for Solomon. It was for life on earth. As a father, he gifted his sons by passing on this knowledge and discretion. A workable definition of wisdom that I don't even know who originally came up with it. I like it. It's fine. Wisdom as skill for living, that's good. A father trying to give his sons skill for living. I recently saw another good angle where someone tweeted, wisdom comes from knowing the patterns God built into creation. This recognition ability helps us not to pet the king's fur backwards, so to speak. We see how the fur falls. We learn not to pet it the opposite way. Unless that's what we're trying to accomplish, then we recognize we can go differently. All of that is good. And while, of course, I actually have in my notes, of stinking course. Of course, there is application for those in any and every station under the sun when it comes to skill for living, when it comes to recognizing these patterns, how God has built into creation. Of course, there is application for all of this wisdom in all the different roles and responsibilities, relationships that we've had, that we have. And yet, I think that we can say that the primary for what in Proverbs, the chief end of the for what for wisdom, the telos for the for what of skill for living is glorifying God in ruling. The book of Proverbs is a father instructing his sons on the family business, which is kingdom administration. More than any other role or responsibility, this wisdom is intended to help the sons learn how to rule in Proverbs 1. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, verse 3, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity. Who needs to know those things? I mean, we all can measure appropriately between neighbors. That is acceptable and right. Business people ought to not play with the weights when they're measuring out what they're selling. And yet, even verse 3, right from the beginning, identifying Solomon, the king, to give wisdom for sake of wise dealing, has special application right away to ruling. And one of the first principles when leading any group of people is to recognize the pattern that a whole bunch of them are going to be stupid. There are rich and poor, there are diligent and lazy, there are righteous and wicked, there are wise and stupid. you're going to be king, you need to know what kind of subjects, what kind of citizens you're going to be governing over, and a whole bunch of them are going to be stupid. Now, I am thinking about stupid not just as a fun word that we don't really want our kids to call each other. I am thinking about it, especially in relationship to a book I read about a year ago called The Basic Laws of Human Stupidity. The book is more like a booklet. It's more like an essay that they printed. The booklet itself is probably less pages long than if you just took the book of Proverbs and printed it out as its own whole book. So The Basic Laws of Human Stupidity is not a super long thing. It actually turns out it's not particularly Christian, but it is at least very astute in recognizing some patterns that God has built in. And so it's sort of a complement. It helps match up some things that we get from Proverbs. The definition that he gives of stupidity in that book is what I am working with even for tonight. So the definition of stupidity is choosing things that don't benefit anyone, including oneself. Or as the author says, a stupid person is a person who causes losses to another person or to a group of persons while himself deriving no gain and even possibly incurring losses for himself. There's four different characters in The Basic Laws of Human Stupidity, and one of them is the bandit, and the bandit causes losses to other people, but at least for his own gain. The stupid person is causing losses to everybody, including himself. Nobody is getting anything good out of stupid decisions. With that definition in mind, I actually think Proverbs has a lot to say about the stupid. I think that stupid could be understood as the genus under which we find the words and characters as labeled in Proverbs as the simple or naive, the fool, obviously, and then the scoffer. I think they are different in terms of how agreeable or how aggressive they are. The simple or naive is a lot of bad things maybe happening to them, but it still can be under the category of stupid. And then, of course, the scoffer is just lighting things on fire, and the fire is too big, so nobody can even get warmth from it, let alone, you know, have a roast. So with the understanding of stupid is making decisions that aren't bending any fun to anybody, probably even causing damage to themselves, let alone other people, we see these variety of characters that it applies to. All of these, the simple, the fool, and the scoffer, all of them are throwing soup on paintings. It's just that some of them have stronger arms and some of the soup has bigger chunks. But they're all just doing stupid things. The book of Proverbs, then, is kind of a stupid vaccine. It's intended to fortify you against the stupid. The book of Proverbs is a treasury of stupid antidote. Not anecdote, not just stories about them, but antidote. How to pay attention and not be affected by them, or at least as much. Proverbs is wisdom that gives rulers skills against stupid people. And as a point of clarification, I am mostly thinking, when I keep saying stupid people, one, I am thinking about the Psalm 94 that we sing, which I'll mention later. Understand, O stupid people, when, O fools, will you be wise? So I'm thinking about it that way. But I am also thinking about persons for whom stupidity is a characterization. I'm not really thinking about a person individually who makes a dumb choice. So it is possible for any of us to make a stupid decision, but not have that be the pattern and the characterization of our lives. So I don't really think, I'm not preaching this message thinking you will then know how to deal with the person across the aisle or across the room. That's not what I am thinking about. I'm not thinking that the people in here are stupid people. You are not stupid sheep. You are not stupid persons. Even though, again, at times, we can all make, and our two-year-olds can definitely make, foolish choices. But in general, I'm thinking about the year in, year out of their entire adult life, foolish choice makers. And we have a hard time escaping from that large section of our population. Somebody keeps giving them microphones and putting them on TV and on your phone. And how are you going to deal with them? Before arranging the headings of giving you some skills against stupid people, a few things. First, this wisdom, ruling wisdom, works for all kinds of lesser magistrates. And that is a fancy term to refer to those who have rule or responsibility at any level. A lesser magistrate. Technically, a lesser magistrate would be like the mayor of a city, the governor then of the state, before you would get up to the president of a nation. So a lesser magistrate or a judge who's on a more local level. So these principles work for all sorts of levels of lesser magistrates. That starts with your own feelings. So the first place that you should be applying this kind of ruling wisdom is yourself. The little city of you, the little town of your heart, your own feelings need this wisdom first. If you do nothing else with these skills that I'm about ready to mention, do self-rule. So when little dumb ideas come popping up, when you are tempted, you are on the path of righteousness. And then you see that the gate into the field of fools is open. You just keep on trucking. You avoid that open gate. Just keep going down the path of wisdom. Obviously, then, there is some application for lesser magistrate levels for fathers and mothers with their sons and kids, dealing with stupid choices of sons and daughters. But all kinds of people can take note. So teachers, bosses, neighborhood association presidents, city council members, Christian nationalists, whatever level and layer there is, this ruling wisdom has some application. Second, as Christians, we are in line to be rulers. That is actually our future. The present isn't a game per se, but you are going to use all of this after school, so to speak. The Lord has made us, this is Revelation chapter 5, verse 10. The Lord has made us a kingdom and priests, Revelation 5, 10, and we shall reign on the earth. Blessed are those who share the first resurrection, Revelation chapter 20, verse 6. They will be priests of God and of Christ, and they will reign with him for 1,000 years. Which means you have got a governing position appointed for you in the millennial kingdom. If you're not a premillennialist, sorry, you don't get to reign like that. Your reign is just some other. I'm tongue in cheek, trying to be playful. If you're a premillennialist, you need this ruling wisdom so you can reign in the kingdom. Otherwise, you're just doing some kind of spiritualized ruling, and that's no fun. We actually are appointed a time of ruling. So right now is when you are putting in some reps to get ready. Proverbs, in this sense, is actually, there's a way to understand that Proverbs is entirely about Jesus. It's Jesus, the king, giving instructions to his sons for when it's time for them to rule with him. So discussion about whether Jesus is in Proverbs, well, at least by way of application, Jesus as the better Solomon, the better king, giving us instruction for when we'll need it later. Third, the stupid people are just mixed in everywhere. Coppola's first basic law, in that book, The Basic Laws of Human Stupidity, the first law out of five that he gives, first law, always and inevitably, everyone underestimates the number of stupid individuals in circulation. And some of the other laws are like, we always underestimate how much damage they cause as well. So I am going to curate, collect under some headings some of the various counsel for us and use some different words to concentrate the pattern recognition, if that's what wisdom is. But there is also a subtle message in Solomon's arrangement of the Proverbs themselves, and that is stupid people come up all the time. As you're reading through Proverbs, you don't get turned to chapter 13, which is all about the fool. The fool just comes up in all kinds of chapters and all kinds of situations. So watch out. Don't underestimate how many times the king is giving instruction, giving wisdom and pattern recognition for stupid persons and how to deal with them. So I've got four main pieces of counsel. I really don't like calling anything a tip other than what I leave at a restaurant. So I don't really like when people ask me for tips. Where are your parenting tips? Don't have any tips for parenting. Be a good parent. It's not a hack. These are not king hacks. I'm not going to go out and buy the URL tomorrow. Kinghacks.com and just give it from Proverbs. But they are instructions, pieces of counsel, ideas to help us have skills. Skills for living and dealing with stupid people. First of all, is expect a miracle. You want to deal with stupid people, expect a miracle. When I say expect a miracle, I mean expect that it's going to take a miracle to fix stupid. I wish that was a joke. I wish I was just being funny. This is like Ninja Shield 101 for dealing with foolishness. Like characterized foolishness in the people who are around us. This is part of the reason that we're so frustrated. We think it is natural or at least obvious to not choose things that hurt yourself. Duh. Right? Why would you choose something that hurts everybody and you? Why not at least do something that benefits you? You can actually have a conversation with the person who's just trying to steal everything to make their own bank accounts better. But the person who's just trying to blow it all up, what reason do you have with them? Like what can you persuade them is better? They don't care. We think it's obvious to not choose things that benefit no one, and it is obvious. I want to encourage you. You are right. It is obvious. It is the same kind of obvious that the world didn't appear from a bang when some gases got too close to each other in the size of the head of a needle, and then here you are reading books a few million years later. It's just that obvious. It's just that obvious that none of you have in your history some kind of frog larvae crawling out of a swamp and then turning into making microphones and driving cars around. It's just that obvious. The problem is, stupid is a way of looking. Stupid is a way of looking wrongly. The stupid person is committed to that way of looking. They can't see another way. My favorite proverb, I have said this before, but I don't get tired of it, and it's good for you. My favorite proverb happens to actually not be in the book of Proverbs. So I'm giving you one proverb that is outside technically, but it is in a wisdom book, so it qualifies. My favorite proverb of all time is Job chapter 11, verse 12. A stupid man will get understanding when a wild donkey's colt is born a man. There are a variety of more colorful ways that has been translated throughout the years into English as well. The word for stupid here has the nuance of hollow, and it's why the New King James translates it as empty-headed. The empty-headed man will get understanding. The New American Standard translates it as an idiot will become intelligent. The NIV says the witless will become wise. So the dimwits will wake up one day and be discerning as soon as a donkey's baby is born a human being. And that's why I say expect a miracle, because that would be a miracle. That would be pretty tweet-worthy. You would share that if that could really happen. This is what we are up against. As soon as a donkey's baby is born a man, that is as soon as you can expect a stupid man to get understanding. You're like, that is unfair. That's just one example. That's hyperbole. Transgenderism has to be made up too, right? Like, nobody would really ever try to claim that. So how about back in Proverbs 27, verse 22? Crush a fool in a mortar with a pestle, along with crushed grain, yet his folly will not depart from him. The mortar and the pestle and the grain is stone on stone, generally speaking. Rock on rock. Grinding, beating, rubbing, pushing. You can grind a fool and still can't get anything wise to come out. Proverbs 17, verse 10 says that you can give 100 blows to a fool, and yet their folly will not depart from them. So if you can't beat stupid out of someone, if them being at the bottom of the barrel is still not going to make them look up, then why do Christians keep thinking if we just smile better, if we show them some charm? Come on over. Don't be dumb. Man is a man. You gotta want that. You are casting, sometimes, pearls before pigs that can't tell the difference between dirt and their own dung. So be wise, recognize this pattern, and this is the skill you need. Don't lose your mind when you see the next step on the obvious trajectory that the foolish person takes. When the stupid person makes choice number 101 that is benefiting no one and hurting even themselves, don't lose your mind about it. You're like, yep, that is a pattern. I recognize how that works. Secondly, stay above the fray. Two of the most well-known proverbs on responding to fools come one right after the other in Proverbs 26. If you turn anywhere, you might want to look at that together. You're probably familiar with it. Proverbs 26, verses 4 and 5. They almost, a junior higher reads them and laughs like it's too clever, because it seems to just be saying one thing and then the exact opposite. I don't know if anybody ever uses this as an example for why there are contradictions in the Bible, but a junior higher would definitely initially read it that way. And it's not that way. Because unlike Democrats, wise people can get plays on words and can grasp the joke and understand better. So we can do better. Proverbs 26, verse 4 works for this particular point. Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. And what is really exciting is that we don't really have to wonder, we don't have to ask artificial intelligence chatbots to tell us what it means to act like a fool in his folly. There are plenty of proverbs that give us instruction on how to identify someone who is acting according to their folly. I found some of them for you. So first, a fool exalts himself to the point of isolating himself because nobody else is as smart as he is in his own mind. When you see a person continuing to get less and less friends, they continue to find less and less people who they can agree with, you have found a fool acting according to folly. You have not found Athanasius. Athanasius is the contra mundum against the world, right? So there are times when there's just one person who knows, but generally speaking, the pattern is if there's that one guy who's got 9 Twitter followers and 7 of them are his mom, this is a good indication that what he says and how he is making his case is folly, according to folly, isolating himself. No one else is as wise in his own eyes as this guy. So the New King James translates Proverbs 18:1 as this: a man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He rages against all wise judgment. It is folly when you are so brilliant that nobody else, according to you, gets how brilliant you are, and therefore you have to stand by yourself in all of the arguing. And that is, even for politicians, that's stupid, right? It doesn't benefit even themselves because then nobody's even going to vote for them. So a fool is isolated. A fool loves to tell you what he thinks. Even while you are talking, he's outlining his response. He's just waiting for you to be done moving your mouth. He is giving full vent to his spirit. That's Proverbs 29:11, and then Proverbs 18:2, the very next passage after the guy who's isolating himself. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. He is known for not listening, known for never being able to change his mind, because he's not learning anything. He found his opinion. He's going to run that out until it's over. A fool can only see what is immediately in front of him. A fool is perpetually short-sighted. Proverbs 21, verse 20 says, "Precious treasure and oil are in a wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it." When an arguer shoots his entire wad in that one conversation, like this is it, certain universal heat death is going to happen to us at the end of this 6 minutes while we're talking to each other. So therefore, I must use every rhetorical thing I possibly can to make my point and prove to you why you are so wrong. That person is short-sighted. They are devouring up the things that are intangible, in this case, in front of them. That's why, to be wise, we shouldn't troll the trolls. So don't let the fool devour your time and your energy. Proverbs 17:12 talks about how it's better to meet a she-bear who has been robbed of her cubs than a fool in his folly. So if a wise man, Proverbs 29:9, if a wise man has an argument with a fool, the fool only rages and laughs, and there is no quiet. Or Proverbs 20, verse 3, it is an honor for a man to keep aloof from strife, but every fool will be quarreling. That is related to Proverbs 26:17, talking about the one who meddles in a fight that's not his, like grabbing a stray dog by the ears. So stay above the fray. Keep your head level and stay above the fray. Sometimes it might actually mean walk away. Proverbs 14:7 says, "Leave the presence of a fool, for there you do not meet words of knowledge." Rhetoric is the art of a good man keeping his pie hole shut. How I like to imagine Quintilian wrote his first draft of defining what rhetoric is. It later came to be, rhetoric is the art of a good man speaking well. But but actually starts by not speaking a good number of times. Stay above the fray. Third, play the long game. Let's go back to the answering two-step in chapter 26. So we had 26 verse 4, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. You are trying to avoid becoming a crazy person, so don't engage at that level. But verse 5 then immediately says, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So yes, we are to do the opposite of what is in verse 4, but not in an inconsistent way. These are not verses that cancel each other out. So don't respond in kind, as in don't respond like a fool. Respond to show the kind that you are dealing with. Respond in such a way that shows them to be the fool. So don't engage in straw stocks sword fights. They have gone out to the cornfield and picked up the stalk of corn or stalk of straw and are trying to joust and fence each other with it. So that's dumb. Don't go cornstalk sword fight. Take out your lighter and light up their cornstalk. Light it on fire. You're not responding then in kind. You're responding to show what kind of argument they actually have. It really is the fool who thinks he must change everyone's mind in that moment. The wise man knows his audience, and his audience is often others who are watching the argument. Probably the greatest compliment I ever got as a teacher was my first year. It was at the end of a horrific first year of teaching a junior 11th grade Bible class at a previous school. And, you know, I was probably less patient than I have come to be now. Like, I still remember, it was a class on missiology, and I asked the class of 18 or 19 students, you know, what would be good ways to evangelize, and the first young lady who raised her hand said, well, if you just do a miracle like a healing, then everybody will pay attention to you. And I didn't get that kind of training or that kind of spiritual gifting. So I knew that we were in for quite a year altogether. But at the end of the year, another student in the class came up and said to me that the thing that she learned most for the whole year was watching me and how I responded to the people who were criticizing and disagreeing. So I'm engaged on the single level of the people that I'm arguing with too many of the times. But it turns out the audience was watching beside. The real people who learned were not actually the people that I was in the middle of conversations with, which is not actually unwise. Proverbs 21:11 says, when a scoffer is punished, the simple becomes wise. So you're not punishing the simple, you're punishing somebody else. But while that happens, somebody else is learning. We need to be thinking more second level consequences, second or third level out. That's wisdom. It's also wisdom to think about how the Lord responds to the stupid. Because I said it this morning, like, he's got to see it. I saw a meme that was the Ben Affleck smoking after a long day outside of a door. He's all discouraged and depressed. I'm sure you've seen it. But this particular one was acting like what ChatGPT looks like after a day of humans asking it dumb questions. Or, you know, 3 weeks ago, what you did with Google. Now nobody's doing the Google, but, you know, imagine if we personified the search algorithms, what stories they would tell each other over a beer at night about the stupid things that people were doing and asking them, researching. So sure, imagine our omniscient Lord, who knows the hearts and intentions and thoughts of all people, and what depths of foolishness he actually notices. And I ask us to engage in that imaginative effort for a moment, because in light of all that he knows, what is he doing about it? And the most important thing, I think, for us to get is that what he is most certainly not doing about it is freaking out. He is not losing any sleep. He doesn't need to sleep. But he's not losing joy because he can see the stupidity. He has great patience, for which those who come to repent and worship him are very thankful that he is so long-suffering and patient even with us. So he's certainly patient. While he knows, he sees, and he's keeping track, maybe the number one way that he currently responds is by letting them have what they think they want. Oh, you want to be stupid? Have at it. Proverbs is full of self-ruin. They make their own choices. The Lord lets them have. That is the pattern that he made. Keep making that kind of choice. This is where it ends up. It's not because he loves what they're doing. He loves the pattern that he made. Those who won't self-rule will self-ruin. Proverbs 1:31 says, "They shall eat the fruit of their own way." That passage in Proverbs 1 is in the middle of a section where wisdom is there. Wisdom is available. Wisdom says, "You can have me." They keep not listening to wisdom. They don't want anything to do with it. And so he says, "Well, then you can have the fruit of your own way." But again, no matter what, when we think about how our Lord is responding, he is not worried about it. He has a variety of plays in his repertoire. When you are in a conversation, you're in a comment thread, you know, I know that the Lord knows what he's doing, and also it'd been helpful for Solomon to have had Facebook so that we could see how a wise person engages there. Or we'd see he didn't even have one. That's what wisdom was. But anyway, you're in the middle of some heated comment thread, or you're stuck at, you know, a table having dinner with family who are outside of the usual discussions. As soon as you feel like you have only got one response, or you're going to punch them in the face, as soon as you are at the level where your face is red, you are, all you can think to do is just prove how wrong they are. You can't smile. You can't laugh. You are in trouble. You are one step away from engaging, not above the fray. When you think that it has to be solved right in that very moment, so many of our conversations are not like that. In a book called A Failure of Nerve, this guy is not a Christian, but again, I think he could see some patterns. He astutely recognized regular way things work. He said, "Chronically anxious families, including institutions and whole societies, tend to mimic the reptilian response. Lacking the capacity to be playful, their perspective is narrow. Lacking perspective, their repertoire of responses is thin." By way of application, then, if the only thing you can think of in response to an angry fool is for you to be angry, then you have joined them. So think broadly. Think, play the long game. At times, stupidity is targeted at us personally. If we can't overlook an offense, then we're not actually as glorious as we thought. Proverbs 12:16 says, "The vexation of a fool is known at once, but the prudent ignores an insult." Or Proverbs 19:11, "Good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense. You can only be that kind of calm and playful when you are fearing the Lord, when you trust Him to say, "Vengeance on stupidity is mine." Let the Lord take it seriously. Stop defending yourself as much as taking opportunity to show that the fool shouldn't trust in his eyes that he is so wise. But there is more than one way to approach those conversations when we are thinking long-term, recognizing that the audience might not even be the person that we are one-on-one-ing with. Maybe somebody else is watching. The fourth, a big last piece of counsel is to never flatter fools. Our rulers are flattering the stupid. For the White House to come out within days of the transgender claiming person killing six Christians in Nashville, for the White House spokespeople to come out and say that they wanted to send their sympathies out to the trans community. And it was that Saturday, it was that Friday or Saturday that Biden announced Trans Day of Visibility. That was before the Trans Day of Vengeance, which turned out, thankfully, to not be so vengeful. You can only do so much venging with pastels. But those who have gone beyond that, like the shooter, it's flattering, it's blowing smoke at people who are hurting themselves, let alone hurting others. I mean, transgenderism is kind of the nuclear level of stupidity of hurting all of the people. We are rewarding fools, we are bailing them out, we give them the microphone, we empathize with their oppression. So our nation is full of man-fearers, or at least the mob of men that we have in our minds. Proverbs 29:25 says, "The fear of man lays a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is safe." So don't fear stupid people who are benefiting no one. We are living in a culture-wide sort of objectivity room, thinking about that hideous strength, where things are silly and our governing class either expects our agreement or isn't blessed enough to boldly stand against it and coordinate the protection. This is because we can't actually fix it with the Constitution. Stupid people are committed to wrongly not reading the Constitution. So expect a miracle. It's going to require fear of the Lord, which is a supernatural act to change where some of this is at. So because that's the case, fear the Lord and say what He says and let the stupid fall where they will. Whoever rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with his tongue. Now, of course, that only works sometimes, because Proverbs 9, 7, and 8 says, "Whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse, and he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you." So, yes, it is true when we speak the truth that wise people will appreciate it, but the fools will continue not. They will continue fighting it. The righteous will groan when wicked fools rule over them. But this is part of the Lord giving us wisdom for ruling, for the rejoicing of others when it is our time. So whatever else you do, don't flatter the fools. Lightning round. Those are the four big ones. Lightning round. Be careful, little ears, what you hear. That's a psalm, but psalms is also in the wisdom genre, so win. I count it. Don't fill up your head listening to the scoffers. Don't go sit with them, digitally or otherwise. So you want to know what to do with stupid people? Well, don't hang out. Walk with the wise. Proverbs 13:20 specifically says that. Try to at least appear smart. And that is from Proverbs 17:28, which says, it's the inspired version of, if at least you just keep your mouth shut, they'll think you're wise, or possibly wise, unless you open your mouth and remove all doubt. So at least try to appear wise, which many times is by just not engaging, by staying above the fray. Discipline your sons. Do not let your sons grow up to be stupid people. Vote, and not for stupid people. Proverbs 29:2 is about rulers who are over us, and when the wicked rule, the people groan. So when you have opportunity to choose somebody that might make you groan less, do it. Love discipline and feedback. I call Proverbs 12:1 the Maggie verse. He who hates reproof is stupid. That made her mad. I knew that that was a button I could push anytime I wanted when she lived under our roof. All I had to do was just quote the Bible. But, yeah, if you don't like being corrected, you inevitably keep making turns towards being a stupid person yourself. And lastly, build up big walls of self-control. Proverbs 25:28 says that the person who has no self-control is like a city whose walls are weak or broken down. You are going to let the fools live in your head rent-free all the time if you don't have self-control. Mental self-control, spiritual self-control, and to some extent, even as it applies, physical self-control. The stupid people are like poor people. They are always with us. So stop freaking out that so many people are so stupid. It's not doing us any good to get anxious about that. It is not wisdom to respond to stupid people for no one's benefit. That is the essence of the definition of stupid. It's not benefiting them. It's not benefiting you. There are times you need to engage for sake of not letting them appear wise in their own eyes or for sake of the benefit of the other people who are watching. But generally speaking, you certainly can't do that from a position of anxiety or worry. So Psalm 94 is what we sing as God of vengeance, O Jehovah. It is a reminder that he is watching and we can let him keep being the watcher and the Lord. So we don't need little stupid people police walking around trying to, you know, micromanage all of the fools. We say what needs to be said and we let the Lord take note and either give vengeance as their self-ruin or vengeance as a righteous punishment when he returns. Understand, O stupid people, when, O fools, will you be wise? That word there for stupid has the idea of being dull as opposed to empty, but being dull, being senseless, being a brute. When, O brutes, will you be wise? It's going to take a miracle, but thankfully we know the God who is able to do that. So we speak the truth and don't freak out. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the opportunity to consider some of this wisdom that we need for now and that we'll need for later. This ruling wisdom, make us wise. We can only be wise as we fear you. Let us not fear men, but reverence and worship and trust and look to you. I do pray this in the name of your Son. Amen.